Great. Thank you, Sean, and thank you to everyone for allowing us to be a part of this and welcoming the foundation into the board. So to begin, I wanted to touch on the first bullet, which was around reviewing and streamlining the student award process for secondary schools. This is part of a larger multi-year plan to centralize awards across our school board. The reason we want to do this is that currently each school has their own sort of way that they manage their awards. And so we really wanted to come up with a process that would centralize it around the managing and administering of awards. We know that as staff move between schools, sometimes those processes and some of the knowledge will go with them. And so we really wanted to ensure that regardless of what school a staff person may be working out of, while the awards information itself might be a little bit different school to school, that process for managing and for administering awards would remain the same. We also want to help bring a more equitable approach to our awards so that students across the school board have the same opportunity to receive an award regardless of what school they have. And that would also then help us identify any gaps that might currently be out there, and then we can look at ways to help fill those gaps. And lastly, a big reason why we want to look at this and develop this centralized approach is really to maintain and strengthen our donor-centered approach to our fundraising. And by understanding what donors are offering what awards within which schools, and often across multiple schools, we can ensure that we have a strong stewardship program for them, and that would allow us to build our award portfolio. We also have to ensure that we're upholding award agreements with donors and presenting the awards as the donor intends. And this is especially important when we are dealing with awards that might that are funded through endowments and trust accounts, as often there is a state and trust law implications to that. I am very pleased to say that despite everything and the challenges with COVID-19 and the ministerial closure, we are moving ahead with awarding the awards for this in June 2020. There was a number of considerations that we looked at when making that decision. First and foremost, awards and the criteria for graduation awards are based on achieving the merit of that award, often with a graduation component and being a successful graduate. And that really is regardless of whether or not there is a ceremony. So our students have, our recipients for awards have met the requirements and the criteria for those awards. And so therefore, they should be presented with that award despite there perhaps not being a ceremony or a delay in the ceremony. And we decided not to, for our grade 12 awards, not to delay actually presenting the awards until perhaps a fall ceremony, as the board had decided to do, because we really felt that the impacts of COVID-19 on our students financially is often quite significant. And we really felt that it was important to distribute those funds to our award recipients so that they really could understand the money that they could count on as they move forward with whatever their path was taking them in the fall, whether that be post-secondary or job markets. But if they were entitled to that money and they had, were to receive that money, we really wanted to make sure that they had it in a timely manner so that they could utilize it in the best way that they felt that they needed to do given the current circumstances. To move on to the second bullet around improving the process related to the student support grants and the school support grant streams, a number of new systems were launched this year to help streamline that process. And certainly anecdotal feedback from staff has been very positive, but we are looking forward to getting a bit more of a comprehensive feedback so that we can continue to refine and improve the process. We certainly appreciate that some of the feedback that we had received to help guide us in these new this new approach was certainly quite valuable and wonderful, but certainly a refinement process and taking some time to reflect and make sure that the decisions that were made and the steps that were implemented are the best and are working out for staff who are on the front lines and are our conduit to being able to support students through these grants is very important. So we certainly are looking forward to being able to get a bit more comprehensive feedback. We did have plans for a survey to go out, but unfortunately we have had to postpone that survey to gather that feedback until we are in a bit more of a stable environment with our staff. We completely appreciate and respect and understand what is going the workload that's being placed on our staff in who are educating students remotely and through online learning, and our principals and support staff, and we just didn't feel that it was right to ask them to take on another piece right now, and we felt that this was one that could wait, and so we've made that decision to wait at this point in time. So that concludes my verbal report. So I will pass it, I believe, back to Sean now, if I'm not mistaken, but thank you so much for your time tonight.
Thank you so much, Amy. Just to recap on that first part, so we are, in terms of our target, we are not on track to meet the target. We say this because as we want the number to increase in terms of the number of community partnerships to align school needs by August, there has just been pieces to this year that we were just unable to make way for that target to actually happen. Job action, COVID-19. We are, though, however, on track where this strategy, once it's activated, like once we are able to, quote unquote, be within a normal school year again, we'll certainly be able to accelerate the data and demonstrate the continued impact that our partners have on our students. So a lot of work has happened this year, and we're really excited to be able to move forward to be able to build on that target, and we're really hopeful that we will be back on track in terms of that increase in partnerships in future targets. Madam Chair, I don't know if you wanted us to stop now or to continue with the parent piece, and I'm just recognizing the time. If you would like us to go into the parent survey now or take any questions.
I think we'll finish the report, and then we will just do questions at the end.
Wonderful. Thank you. So at this time, I'd like to pass it over to Superintendent Sharon Stefanian. Superintendent Stefanian and I have been working on the parent voice with research and analytics. We were last here reporting on the 2018 survey, and we actually were able to complete the 2020 survey just before the ministerial order. So back in January, we were able to promote this survey. So at this point, I'll turn it over to Superintendent Stefanian for a quick overview of the results. Thank you.
Thank you, Sean, and I apologize if my microphone is cutting out at all. I've been having some challenges with it, so if you're having difficulty hearing me, please interrupt and just let me know. But very happy to be providing the program committee with an update on the results from our recent parent, guardian, caregiver voice survey. I should mention that we also have my colleague Bill Torrens on the line as well. Bill's department played a critical role in engaging parents around our three priorities connected to literacy, numeracy, and graduation, so happy to have him here this evening as well. As Sean had indicated, the results that we're sharing with you this evening, we managed to close the survey and summarize the survey before March break, and this year we saw 2,359 responses from our parents, guardians, and caregivers, and our previous iteration had about 1,500. So we have a good data set here to continue to focus our work around. And of course, well, this evening we're talking about this particular survey, I'll remind trustees that we also do have the thought exchange data, which again is supplementing information that we have from our community. And of course, the information that we've received in the interim report, with respect to the work of our bowling panel and the final report that's forthcoming. So in this section, what I'm going to do is just reflect a little bit on what we heard from our families in 2018 and where we have comparators, what we heard in 2020. So in 2018, much like 2020, we asked families about the communication methods that they found were the ones that were the most effective for them and their satisfaction with our variety of communication methods that we use. In 2018, the top three ways in which parents engaged with HWDFB staff and that they were most satisfied with included the face-to-face contact with teachers, principals, and other school staff. Of course, no surprise there. Report cards followed by the parent-teacher interview. When we move forward to the 2020 survey and we asked the same question, what we saw is that parents had identified that the automated phone calls were one of the ways in which communication was most appreciated, followed by parent-teacher interviews, followed by information from our website notification service, and then from report cards. Now, while we continue to see report cards and the parent-teacher interview come up in both 2018 and 2020, trustees will note that the satisfaction level in 2020 is lower than it was previously. And I'll just remind everyone that the survey took place when we were in job action. So many of the traditional ways in which we were interacting, such as through face-to-face interviews and information on report cards, were impacted during that time. In 2018, we asked a question around how parents, guardians, and caregivers perceive their child's school in terms of being friendly and welcoming. And at that time, 85% felt that their child's school was friendly and welcoming. And most recently, that number has increased from 85% to 94%. We know how incredibly important it is that our parents and our students feel safe and welcome and that their school is a friendly and welcoming place. And so certainly a good trajectory to see that number increasing from the previous iteration of the survey. We, of course, also use this survey to do a check-in around parent awareness of our three priority areas, being mathematics, literacy, and graduation. In 2018, we had 51% of our parents responding that they had some knowledge related to our mathematics priority and what was happening in their child's classroom. 57% connected to having an understanding of what their child was learning in literacy. And 51% of secondary parents saying that they were knowledgeable about what the graduation requirements were for their children. When we reflect on the most previous iteration, again, a celebration in this area, what we see is that parent knowledge around what's happening in their child's classroom with respect to mathematics has gone from 51% to 68%. Literacy has improved from 57% to 76%. And graduation, you'll note that we have broken it down into awareness from parents who have children in grades 7 and 8, so that number is at 34%. But for those who have a child in secondary school, we've seen their knowledge about graduation requirements move from 51% to 61%. So again, many celebrations in that area. In 2018, we asked families about the homeschool connection and how can we support them in terms of the areas that they were interested in learning about. And so you can see that EQAO transitions as well as literacy, numeracy, mental health and well-being, and self-regulation were the topics of greatest interest. And most recently, we saw the numbers increase consistently in terms of mental health, well-being, self-regulation, mathematics, reading, and new this year being safe schools. And this was an important question for staff because certainly as we were thinking about our parent reaching out grants and how we can support parents, we were looking at the types of learning opportunities we could provide for parents based upon their interests. And how we can provide those in a way that is responsive to parents' needs. And so this information will help to inform that work as we go forward. And that brings me to the conclusion on the data that we have gathered through the Parent Voice Survey.
Thank you, Sharon. And that concludes the report. And we're happy to take any questions.
Well, thank you very much for all of that information. It is a lot to digest, but I will turn now to trustees for comments and questions. I will start with Trustee Danko.
Thank you. And through the chair, I appreciate the report from the staff. And if I can just commend staff, particularly with regards to partnerships, your ability to be adaptive, to be flexible in the current time and to pivot to ensure that we're still bringing community partners in to support our students is fantastic. So while I recognize that you haven't met the target the way you were hoping, I still think there's really important work that's happened. My question with regards to partnerships is really about parents as partners, and I know that's not the focus of this report, but when we look at doing the needs analysis based on the schools that are completing that, and I think that's an excellent strategy to make sure that we're getting the right supports into our schools based on the needs of those schools, are we also considering not just community partners, but the close to likely 100,000 parents, guardians, and caregivers that we can access through our schools because they are there to support their individual students but often have something to offer that might support the entire school. Do you think that there will be an opportunity to share what the school needs are with parents and caregivers in the local community as opposed to just the broader, more formalized community partners?
All right, I'll pass to Sean.
Thank you, and through the chair, I think that that's a fantastic opportunity to see the assets of the partners and the when we look at parents as partners, for sure. I know that we've been working with school councils, and I might ask Superintendent Stefani if she has anything to add afterwards as well, but certainly the ability for us to look at some of the information that is coming to us. We are working closely with school councils, and through our strategic communications and engagement plan, we are looking at how our parent leaders can do the work that parent leaders need to in order to support the school and to support other parents as well and to capture some of that information as well. So this kind of plants the seed for potentially future work that we need to do, because I definitely see as we're supporting our parent leaders right now through school council and home and school associations, we will definitely be able to look and continue that work at school council to be able to leverage the work that our parents are doing in terms of them as partners. And I'm not sure if Superintendent Stefanian has anything else to add.
Sorry, Madam Chair, can I jump in?
Yes, of course.
Sorry, it's hard when you can't see the person. No, I agree and support completely what Sean had just shared. And the only thing that I will add is that when I think about our volunteer policy, a big part of that is to look at matching the strengths and the gifts that our volunteers bring to what the needs are in the school. And so, again, seeing this data as being something that can be extremely helpful at the school level in terms of sharing out where the gaps are and where the needs are and how we can match that up with the expertise that our parents are bringing.
Thank you. Don, any more?
Just a comment and a question. So comment, just again, thank you for the work on Food for Families, Equity of Access. That's such important work that's happened over the past couple of months as we've been in this COVID situation. And I do appreciate the Grade 8 Graduation Ad Hoc Committee consulting on that. I do have a person at home that's at that age. If I went to the parent survey, so I recognize that depending on when you do a survey, you may get different results, and that can influence the results. I want to acknowledge that in the current survey, something that's different from the 2018 survey is that we have automated phone calls home that we're asking about. We have website notifications, and I know that those are important ways to reach people who are very busy. And I know that I sometimes get blasted with notifications, but it means I don't miss the message. So I appreciate that. When it comes to learning, we asked the question in a different way this time around. So we asked if you knew a lot or a little about mathematics or literacy versus being knowledgeable or somewhat knowledgeable. And I'm not sure we can correlate those because I'm pretty sure I answered a little when I answered on behalf of my kids. And I really appreciate how little I knew now that I'm trying to support my kids in math and literacy at home through distance learning. So how do we take this information and, you know, take the wins where we have some people that know a lot, but what is the strategy then going forward to build on where we have parents who do know and improve that? And I'm going to throw in one other question. I'm just going to tag it on. It's a little bit different. The other question is about – hang on. I've just lost track of it, actually. Okay, I'll leave that question, and then I'll see if I can remember the last question.
Thank you.
Sorry, Sean, you go first.
Oh, I just wanted to reiterate that what was very interesting about this cycle of survey is that this was done in January 2020, and when you reflect on the increase in awareness about School Messenger and the notifications that are going home, we were actively using that service a lot more just because of the climate we were in. And tonight, actually, as we send out our, I think, our 13th message to families about COVID-19, we are inserting a piece around parents' preference to be able to select which method they're most interested or they would like to receive the most in terms of email and text and phone call. We know that that's been a lot and very overwhelming, especially when you're a parent of more than one child in the system. And if you're an elementary, secondary parent as well, that can be overwhelming. The other interesting piece about this is that we have obviously gone through COVID, and we recently did our thought exchange survey with parents, and Sharon and I have talked about that piece about the survey from January 2020 to the thought exchange survey, and I know that we have a great interest in looking at the two results and seeing where we were pre-COVID and post-COVID. Superintendent Stavinian, I'm not sure if you have anything to add.
So thank you, Sean. A couple of things, and then I'll flip it to Bill, who can talk about some of the specific strategies with respect to math literacy and graduation. But prior to COVID, we dedicated a large part of one of our parent involvement committee meetings to the conversation around how do we support parents in learning what it is that they would like to learn connected to their child's education. And one of the strategies that we identified for implementation in fall of 2020, so the upcoming fall, of course, dependent upon where we are with COVID, was a concept that tentatively was branded as HWDFB Talks. And what parents had shared with us is that sometimes if a school has a workshop or they have a guest speaker, if it's offered at a time in which parents are unable to come into the school, then they lose the opportunity to participate in that learning. And so they suggested that we look at a model that allows for just-in-time learning for parents. In their words, small bite-sized learning, 20 minutes at a time on a specific topic of interest to parents. And so when we look at the final slide that you have in the slide deck, those were the four areas that were the most popular in terms of where parent interest lied. And, of course, you can see that reading and mathematics continue to be at the top of the list. And so their interest was in having an HWDSB staff member who would speak for 20 minutes maximum on the topic that parents were interested in, that it would be archived on the board's website for parents to access when it was information that they were ready to access at that particular moment in time. And then supplemented with that would be a series of resources or links that parents could use to access further information. And so that was the direction that came from the parents in terms of how we can support them in continuing to learn about these pivotal areas. And I know that Superintendent Torrens with the program team has been doing some very targeted work on math and literacy. So I'll maybe turn it to Bill for a moment just to comment.
Thank you, Sharon. And through the chair, I'll just quickly comment that parent engagement and making parents aware of programming and program options is actually a connection that we've been making to our larger board strategies around all students reading, all students making progress in mathematics, and all students graduating. So the improvement that you've seen may come in part from work of educators in kindergarten and grade one, often supported by a reading specialist, using materials that we've created to help parents become more aware of the progress their child's making. Mathematics specifically, and thank you to Mark Taylor from Communication, who's done a lot of work in this area. We actually have a tailored page on the board's website for Math Help for Elementary and math information with numerous resources for parents. And Mark and members of the program team have been involved in piloting some parent awareness sessions at schools to, again, do some learning on behalf of the large organization on how to engage parents in mathematics. And in graduation, I feel the committee is well aware of many of the strategies we use specifically around CHISM, specialized skills majors programming, and other pathways through events like My Path, My Way to help parents and caregivers, students become aware of some of their options as they move through towards graduation, but also knowing those graduation requirements. I will note that, pardon me, a lot of this work we are, and it's noted in the data, we are engaging parents as early as grade 5 and 6 now in thinking about pathways and thinking about different program options for children as they head towards secondary, and with that comes, of course, creating awareness around graduation options.
Thank you. I just got a phone call, an email, and a text, Sean, so thanks for the update tonight. I haven't read them yet. I think one of the differences is in terms of what we can do as a board broadly, we can educate parents on what's happening in mathematics in, say, grade 5. But as a parent, I want to know what's happening with my child and their progression in mathematics, and I guess that's where that really comes down to teacher communication and classroom communication, which hopefully if we think about our digital strategy, if we have more of a blended environment for learning, maybe that's that opportunity to get the specific, student-specific information at the parents. My last question that I did remember now is, it did say the 21st century learning results of this survey would be shared with the program team. I didn't see them explicitly shared or at least not teased out in the earlier report today, but were they included in the strategy that's been developed so far?
And through the chair, if I may, I'm more than happy to address that. So in terms of the work that was presented earlier today, Superintendent Stepanian had shared that wider data with me and the program team, and we took a look at looking at parent voice in terms of being supporting the development of a program, the skills that they thought were important for students to acquire. We actually saw voice also on what devices they wanted to see within the classroom.
Thank you. So I guess we'll see like the specific results at a future program meeting. Is that correct?
Certainly I can present those results at a future meeting.
That would be lovely. Okay, those are my questions. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Don, and for Bill and Sharon and Sean for your responses. I will leave now to Trustee Archer. Do you have any questions or comments?
Not at this time, thank you.
Thank you. Trustee Miller?
Hi there. Thank you. Hello?
Okay.
Can everyone hear me? Okay. Sorry, I thought I cut up there. Thank you to everyone who did all of those reports. It's really nice to kind of see all of the data on our community partners, our parent voice, and the foundation, and sort of see how far we've come. I wanted to just ask a couple questions around, particularly around our community partnerships. So last week at Board, we were presented with the interim report from the Safe Schools panel. And in there, I know it's not the final report, but in there we saw emerging themes around, many participants at our evening sessions had communicated that they wanted to see, a stronger tie with local community partnerships, social justice work, equality work, which I know is highlighted in our equity action plan. But I'm wondering if we have, I know that it was highlighted in the report tonight, we're not at our target for the amount of partnerships we're looking to have, which is fantastic because we're almost at 200, and I love that we are ambitious to take on more. But I'm wondering if we have any kind of guiding principle looking towards September or the fall for are we doing any outreach to social justice groups? Do we wait for them to reach out to us? And obviously taking into account that we haven't received the final report from the Safe Schools panel, I can appreciate that, but do we have kind of a proactive, or is there room to be proactive around some of the themes that we've seen emerging from, the panel discussions and some of the connections here that we already know? That's my first question.
I'll turn it to Sean McKillop.
Thanks so much. We definitely did do a lot of outreach and documentation, I guess, of some of the partners who have been part of this journey with us, in particular this year. I've been in conversations with Superintendent Stepanian in her role at Safe Schools to support the work that Safe Schools is doing. I know that we've been having many conversations with different partners who have come to our attention through this process, who have been very active in part of the panel consultation nights. Some of them we've become quite close with. Superintendent Stepanian, if you wanted to share a little bit about that work, and we're certainly happy to support that as well.
Sure, and thank you for the question. And as Sean said, yes, absolutely. So while we do have partners that we have been working with, some for a very extended period of time, We have some partners that we have been working with for a shorter period of time, and then we have partners who we have met through the consultation process that has been happening with the bullying panel. But our doors are always open. So we know that there are new organizations that may emerge that we potentially haven't worked with before. We know that when it comes to addressing issues connected to equity and inclusion, it's work that we can't do alone. We do need to work in partnership with our organizations within the community. Even in this time of COVID, as you've heard about this evening, there's already been refreshed partnerships or enhanced partnerships because of the shared interest in wanting to be able to support students and families within our community. So it's really two-way. So there are times when we will identify a gap and we will look at where the expertise is within the community, and we will reach out to see if the organization is in a position to work in partnership with us around that. And sometimes the organization reaches out to us and indicates that they have something that they'd like to support and something that they would like to offer. And again, we look at how we can best align our shared interest and have that expertise come to the table. So we're always open to new partners, but absolutely we also are out seeking to fill gaps if we don't have a partner in a particular area.
Trustee Nellis?
Okay, thank you so much for that response, both to Sean and to Superintendent Stefanian. Let me see here. I believe those are my questions for the moment. I'll flag it if I need anything else, but thank you so much for now.
Not a problem. Okay, I'll turn now to Trustee Dee.
Even though we are not on track to meet some of our targets here, I do want to say that we've come a long way, baby. I think just the reporting and, the partnerships, and I do believe in all the work that was done before COVID hit and some of the other things that have hit have really sort of set us in a good place with partners to be able to meet, to meet some of these challenges. I do have a few questions. But I did want to thank the teams again on all the work on this. It's been incredible to watch it develop. Going right back to the partnerships overview, one of the first slides, I think it's slide 3, I've got it here, slide 3 of 17, where you show the little icons about be an educational partner, conduct research, volunteer. The one at the bottom is just distribute flyers. I'm just wondering, because I think the calls that we're getting where people want to, I'm assuming that is when they're wanting to promote something. So these partners that want to promote, promote an event, promote, an opportunity, because distributing flyers, I know has changed, obviously, because I think, I don't know how many actual flyers we're getting anymore. It's more, I would assume, online and looking for different ways to promote. So I'm just wondering whether a broader, on that icon under distribute flyers, would maybe, whether sum it up a little bit better. And Sean, is that the question for Sean?
I'll turn that over to Amber. Would that be okay for you to answer?
Sure, I would be happy to answer that. So, yes, Trustee Deeth, you are correct in your assumption around the distribution of flyers. A lot of our community partners have great community events that they are running, community barbecues, community walks, things like that. So we actually have a flyer distribution page on our website with guidelines, and we publicly recognize the recent flyers that have met certain criteria for approval. So the process is that community partners can upload their own flyer onto our website, and our team approves the flyers, and then they are posted on the website for the system to see. So that is still relevant. People do still promote through different means electronically. And while we promote some of these through social media, the flyer distribution page on the website is one mechanism that we utilize to support the promotion of these community initiatives.
Trustee.
Okay. Okay. That makes sense. Like I said, when you look at distribute flyers, I'm thinking old school, right? Like at flyers at school, although, like I said, I know a lot is done through social media, and I'm just wondering other ways to promote things. So that makes sense. So thank you, Amber. A couple of questions. You have here an ad hoc committee for grade 8 grad. Is there a high school ad hoc committee?
Would this go then to Amber again?
Well, I can try.
Yep, go ahead.
Add that. I believe so. The work that the way that we're structuring some of our time right now during COVID is through the contingency committee, and there was an ad hoc group dedicated for grade 8 graduations. As many of you know, a decision was made through the contingency committee and through executive council that the high school graduations would be postponed to the fall. So that decision was done at the contingency and exec council level. And then so we knew that grade 8 graduations required some more conversation, some more brainstorming and creative idea generating. So that's, I believe, and I won't, you know, shouldn't put words in associate director's mouth, but that, I believe, is the rationale for why the ad hoc committee was formed for the graduation for grade 8.
So, because what I'm hearing, and I was getting calls all yesterday and today, is that parents, even though they're hearing that the grads are being postponed till the fall, they're not confident that anything will happen, or they're not sure what will happen. So they're wanting to do something now to recognize the grads in different ways. So I think even helping, parents. As obviously students are disappointed, I don't know whether there's an opportunity there maybe to create some opportunities and things that parents can do now to recognize or what can and can't be done, I guess, because they're talking about parades and they're talking about, you know, teachers going around and planting lawn signs, and there's all kinds of ideas coming out fast and furious. I don't know if any other trustees experiencing it, but like I said, over the weekend and over today, I was getting all these calls about what can and can't be done. So I'm just throwing that out there, and I know I've been redirecting them to talk to the principal, talk through ideas with the principal, but they are wanting to do something now to recognize their students because they're not sure what will happen in the fall. So I'll just throw that out there. And I don't know if anybody wants to respond, or I can just, it was more of a statement around that, so.
Trustee Buck, it's Peter Sobrang here. To Trustee's question, I can respond.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. So Trustee Dees, thank you for the question. So we actually had a separate ad hoc committee specific to grade 8 graduations for the reasons that Sean has indicated, but we've also had an ad hoc committee looking at celebrations in general across the entire system, which would include celebrating our grade 12 graduates during this time, not a graduation ceremony, as you said, because that we formally indicated that we would defer to when we're able to upon reopening. So there has been a separate ad hoc committee that has been looking at different celebrations, and we'll be sharing that information with trustees and with families shortly.
Perfect. Great. Thank you. So the only other questions I have, when, again, on this data that we've got here, in 2018,
to 2019, or sorry, 2020, about the satisfaction our families with various communication methods. In 2018, calls didn't show up at all, and yet we've had these automated phone calls for a while now. So I'm just wondering why it didn't show up in 2018 at all.
I can respond to that. So the one reflection that we did have was that the frequency of calls that were coming out during the time of the survey, and so there could potentially be other reasons for that. I know that my department has worked hard to try to leverage the school messenger software within the two-year period for sure. But definitely during this time that the survey was administered, we were doing a lot of homeschool communication through the school messenger, because job action is one example of why we would have been calling home more in 2020.
Okay. Thank you. And then... we've got homeschool connection, 2018-2020. So it's just broken down a little bit different from 2018 to 2020. Is that because the questions changed, or is it just in the reporting of it?
I was going to jump in on that.
So thank you. So through the chair, yes, thank you for the question. So when the question that was asked was essentially, it was the same question. Where the difference was in terms of how the parents responded or the categories that they responded in. In the previous iteration, the language that was used, as trustees can see from the 2018 slide, showed knowledgeable or somewhat knowledgeable. Upon reflection and feedback, there was the suggestion that we look at language that may be a little clearer in terms of a lot, a little, not too much, I don't know, or it doesn't apply to me. In working with our research and analytics department, they have looked at how the parallels between the 2018 data and the 2020 data to ensure that when we were combining categories, we were being consistent and they were confident in the approach as using it for comparison.
Trustee Deep? Trustee Deep?
Sorry, I was on mute. The only other question I have is as we've learned with this with what's happened and the importance of parents being up to speed on some of this learning and what's happening and I think being thrown into the midst of being a bigger part in their child's education, is there an opportunity? I know we've got our summer our summer school or our summer learning academy or whatever it is. Is there an opportunity to create some summer learning programs for parents to catch up on some of this or to learn more about some of this, maybe at a time over the summer when they have time to take a breath and reflect and, like I said, maybe learn more?
Peter?
Thank you. Great question, and we certainly have that in the plans in terms of how do we facilitate some learning for parents as we head into the reopening in the fall. So stay tuned. We definitely have some of that in the works.
Awesome. That's great to hear. I just want to finish with that again, is an incredible amount of work that's happened. We've seen incredible, with the whole partnerships and how we've utilized partnerships and how we're engaging parents. It's been an incredible
amount of work, and I just want to thank all the teams, you know, Sean and Amber and your team and Sharon, for all the work that's gone into this. So great job, and look forward to seeing where this goes.
All right, thank you very much, Trustee Deep. I'm going to check, is Alex Johnstone on the phone with us still? Okay, I thought I heard her call drop. So actually, you know what, enough of my questions I touched on. I did want to say, every time partnerships comes to us, it's fantastic. The organization is something that I think will benefit our board for decades. The work being done, it really is so simple of a format, and it really looks like something that administrators and parents and organizations that would want to partner with us and even students can really benefit from. I did have one question. In the needs assessment, I believe it was said that only the top three needs of a school were reported by the administrator. Does this mean that only three of the needs will be met, or could we just maybe expand on that a little bit? I think maybe Amber would be the right person to go to.
Sure, thank you. I would be happy to answer that. So the intention behind ranking the three needs was so that it was manageable from the administrator's perspective. You know, our areas of support will list 10 specific areas, which will be an option for administrators to choose. But we recognize that being able to rank all 10 in terms of their importance for that school year may be challenging for our administrators. So we felt like three was more manageable. And of course, this does not discount the continued work through the year on all of the other areas. So it is going to be made very clear to our administrators that if an emerging need does come up, of course, we are constantly working together on meeting any of those needs. But really, it was just to target and streamline the needs of most important for that school year.
Okay, that's what I thought we were getting at with that, but I just wanted to be sure that we weren't limiting our schools to just three needs being met, and that they would still have access to other resources on an as-needed kind of a basis. As partners are available to help meet those needs. Okay, and then I will just say one more thing with the foundation. And the work that they've been doing, just a giant thank you. These have been challenging times, to say the least, and one wouldn't have expected 3 months ago that the world would look the way that it does right now. And I love the adaptability that the Hamilton Foundation for Student Success has had, and that their work has really continued, and we found new ways of supporting students and families, and I just am very proud of the work that has been done over these last number of weeks. With that, there is no motion attached to this, it's just a report, so there is no need for a vote, and I will I'll maybe just ask trustees one last round, just broad. Do any of you have any questions? If now it's your time to speak. If not, then we will move to adjourn. Okay, I hear no questions, so I will have Trustee Archer move to adjourn this evening's meeting. Thank you to all of our staff and all of this hard work that you've put into not just this presentation, but with realizing the work behind it, and I hope each one of you has a great week. With that, our meeting is over, and enjoy your week, everybody.